mein auf den Supercast.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 382. I'm Adam, and Confucius say, man who go to bed with itchy bottom, wake up with smelly finger. And here is Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I say, I may have had a bang on the head, but this is a dashed queer story.
Mary Lang.
You ask so that you can answer.
And Debbie Melrose.
Supposing I want two.
Yes, of course. Yes, after some Skyvers that were supposed to be around on the last scheduled recording time, we had to cancel it. We're finally back.
Sorry.
Brought in sides, too.
And after having watched Talons of Weng Chiang with plenty of time, I've now forgotten everything about it.
I'm surprised nobody used sleepers for tortoises.
So, therefore, I'm going to have to try and wing it. This week. Now, I'm just going to have a look through the thread to see who I've got to deduct points from not being available for the last recording.
That was not my fault.
Oh, Debbie Melrose. Yes, that was one, was it? That was minus 2 points. Anybody else who's going to own up to not being available for the last recording?
Were you available, Mary?
I was available.
Therefore, that's it then. Right, so I'll just delete Andy because he's not going to be.
Andy was not.
Okay, so there we go. I now have my three players for the quiz. Yes, I know, Debbie. I did hope you got the message that I already had some questions.
Yes.
Good. Okay, point reinstated. Right then. Actually, look at my bell for that matter.
That'll go pretty quick.
Yeah, it's still there and it's still working. Right then. So, yes, the Talons of Weng Chiang, which we're not going to go through particularly slowly. It's a six-part story, which we've done before, even if Kirby will try and interrupt. Before we talk about the Talons of Weng Chiang, I must say that Isabella and I were on a camping holiday at Thorness Bay last week. Very good fun it was, too, apart from when I woke up in the middle of the night with cramp on several occasions. Very painful on the first night. And that's
I
beg your pardon?
Not enough quinine.
Really? And that's just through pumping up the tent. Yes, we have a rather marvellous, innovative tent made by Berghaus. They make inflatable tents. Basically, you pump up the struts, and it's as rigid as a tent can be, and very big and comfortable. But unfortunately, when I was pumping it up, I pumped up all the energy into pumping it up. It's quite a lot of energy out of an old fart like me to pump up a tent. And of course, I take the pipe out, and it went down. Looked at the instructions that said you had to press this little button in the valve to actually keep the air in. Unfortunately, I'd spilled so much energy in the process of trying to pump this up, that tent up, that led me to straining the muscles in my upper thigh. So very, very painful it was too. But once the tent was up, it was all good fun, apart from the rain on Thursday night. But of course, sadly, as all holidays do, it came to an end and we had to come home. But I would highly recommend the tents that we used. I don't know why I talked about that. I just thought I'd mention one of the things I've been up to in a while. Should have been podcasting 3 weeks ago. However, I want to say
that in your pictures you're looking remarkably fuzzy and bristly, but now you look very clean shaven.
Well, that would be because I've had a shave, Mary, and a haircut.
Two bits.
No, I just want to talk quickly about Celebrity Big Brother. Which has just started after having put up with weeks of actually liking Love Island, which was quite a thing for me.
That's rubbish.
Never mind that. Do you watch it?
I used to a long time ago.
Yeah, well, it's a car crash telly, but it's quite entertaining. Anyway, Celebrity Big Brother started this week with a certain Kirstie Alley as the star celebrity on it. And all you lot are going, who? Well, Kirstie Alley used to be in Cheers. She was in one of the Star Trek films. She was in some cracking films, Look Who's Talking 1 and 2. I think she's quite a bit of a Hollywood legend. I beg your pardon, Debbie?
She was in Cheers.
I said that at the start, right? Point deductive for not listening. Where's the other one?
I don't know why I bother anymore.
Minus two now. All right, then. So, after talking about all that chinny-wag stuff, we're going to talk about The Talons of Weng Chiang, which starts with episode one, or part one, as it says
Master.
I didn't even get half a second into that.
And he doesn't get a point deducted.
He does get a point deducted, actually.
He's right. Going to argue with you about the title, maybe.
No.
I didn't even...
I wasn't even going to discuss... This, my interruption was not for discussing anything about this itself.
What about Kirstie Alley?
I wanted to ask if Debbie had seen this one before.
No, but I've seen it twice through now.
Yeah, I saw that part that you posted that. So it's always nice to know when someone's never seen a story before.
Yeah, well, she could have said about that afterwards, but never mind. Right then. Talents of Weng Chiang by Robert Holmes begins with a scene shot in what used to be a television studio that we had on in the 1970s for a program called The Good Old Days. They've made it a little bit darker, but when The Good Old Days was on, basically they used to have variety acts from the current time, which was the 1970s, would come up dressed in old garb. The audience were dressed in old garb, and they just do their normal acts in the stylee of Victorian, theatre. And that's what The Good Old Days was all about. Be interested to know how many seasons that run for, but I seem to remember it being on quite a lot during my childhood. And that appears to be the studio they used for these scenes. Nobody's interrupted me, so I presume I'm right.
Wait, no. Wait, are you talking about the theatre scenes?
Oh, God, he's going to say I'm wrong, isn't he? Yes.
Yeah, those are the Royal Theatre in Northampton.
So where was The Good Old Days shot then?
I have no idea. So, never heard of it.
No, whatever. Right then. So anyway, well then we see this this white chap who's been cosplayed up as some very badly looking Chinese bloke. Yes, Kirby.
What?
You about to say something?
Not really.
Not really. Anyway, yeah. Okay, so
I thought everyone knew this was shot in a real theater. All
I don't care.
Theater.
Okay.
And the leader of the orchestra is the actual person who wrote the music, Dudley Simpson.
Okay. Don't care. Anyway, so we meet this chap, who's cosplaying as a stereotypical Chinese weirdo. And he obviously a bit of racism going on there because they could have actually cast a Chinese actor to play this part. But never mind, they didn't. They would never get away with that these days, but they did that time. And of course, he's carrying around an alleged sort of puppet, which is Mr. Sin. Very creepy Mr. Sin. Brilliant design on this show. And of course we also meet Mr. Jago, who is still in Doctor Who at the moment in the Jago Nightfoot stuff on Big Finish, all off the back of this story.
I believe one of them has died recently though.
Okay, Jago and Jay. I don't know. Anyway, they had done recent stuff on
Big Finish. One of the plays, Professor Lightfoot, is the one who was.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is they had. All right, I got it wrong, but they have recently been involved. I'm surprised they'd probably get another actor to play the voice of Lightfoot, to be fair. It's quite an easy.
Yeah, what I heard was for the most recent of the Jago and Lightfoot recordings, he died unexpectedly, I believe, while they were recording. So they finish the story by going back and sampling from previous things.
Oh, that's clever. Very clever. So Jago is the manager of the theatre, and some bloke.
And he has such a flowery way of talking. I love it.
I love it. He's in the Foresight Saga, the modern adaptation of the Foresight Saga. He's wonderful in that.
Yeah, he does. He was also in a John Pertwee story called The Inferno. Where he played a character that died and then didn't, Sir somebody or other.
Oh,
Sir
yes.
Reginald, was it? I can't remember. And obviously, and a new Who story, which was The Unicorn and the Wasp.
Yes.
But yes, so there's some shenanigans going on, and some bloke runs in and moans about a disappearance of somebody he quite likes.
His bird.
Of course, this all gets defected by the clearly, blatantly responsible Mr. What's his name? Chang, isn't it? Mr. Chang. Lee Sin Chang. Yes? No? Yeah. Okay. The Doctor and Leela arrive.
Trevor Baxter.
The Doctor decides he's going to dress up as
Lightfoot,
Sherlock Holmes.
Died last year.
And Leela decides to, she's made to wear a very strange, more like a sort of boy's outfit, really, than a girl's outfit from the late 19th century. Somebody might argue that, but wasn't very feminine at this point. And the chap with the ball with bowler hat, what was his name? Fretting about something. So then the Doctor gets attacked, and the assailant is done in by a Genosaur. Is he? I think he is. Hello? Is anyone still there? Am I talking to myself?
I done in by who?
Oh, they are still there. That's fair enough.
We're here.
I'll just do the whole show on my own. By the way, probably the best way.
Mr. Sin is played by Deep Roy.
Oh, there we go. I've got a volume again there. Yeah, it turns itself off every 10 seconds.
I love Deep Roy. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Deep Roy. Who's Deep Roy?
Well, you might remember him from... He played the Oompa Loompas in the Johnny Depp Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
He played every Oompa Loompa.
And he also played mini Frodo Baggins for the big and small shots, you know, in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
In Legend, and he was
I think he was only like 18 years old when he did this one.
He's brilliant.
So somewhere there's behind the scenes footage of them filming rehearsing this, but I couldn't find it.
Oh, I found my microphone fluffer. Hang on, just anybody listening to the show, there's a bit of a rustle, and my microphone fluffer is going on right now. So that's me putting my microphone fluffer back on right now. Right then, who are you talking about? Sorry, which character are you talking about?
The puppet.
Oh, the puppet.
Mr. Sin.
Of course. Anyway, so yeah, the doctor gets attacked, but the assailant is killed by, well, we presume killed by Leela. And then we see a scene on stage of a levitated woman.
No strings on her.
No.
Yeah, very nice strings. Oh, Master?
Yes?
If you look online of who is watching us do this, there's a certain Andy Nunney.
So why is he watching if he's not on?
Yeah.
Maybe he's not near an iPad at this point. Perhaps. I don't know. Just thinking. Yeah, we've got a few comments coming through. Now you come to mention. We've got Lillian Robin has joined. Loined? Of course, thinking about her legs, so I thought about loins. sleep for tortoises, she says, or as some northern people say, tortoises. Like I say, Andy,
sleep
Laurie.
Sleep for tortoises. That's one of the doctor's lines.
Matthew Kressel has also joined. Jeff Waddle, it takes a lot of energy to get it up. That's what she said. I was referring to my tent. Lillian Robin, I can play the trumpet voluntarily in a bowl of live goldfish. Apparently. I'd like to see that, Lillian.
She's doing quotes, I think.
I know she is. For God's sake. Jeff Waddle joined. I'm doing these in reverse order. And then replying to Lillian, Jeff Waddle said, how about involuntary? And then Laurie Nick said, I'd rather hoped we'd catch little Titch after saying is loudly singing a bicycle belt for two. Built for two. I did nearly have my glasses run over by the other day. So if I don't read things properly, I have an excuse. Lauren
X. I did offer to come round.
What's that got to do with my glasses?
I could have read it for you.
Oh, shut up. Victorian Fashion Police. Leela is not wearing a boy's outfit, apparently. It's a lady's cycling costume. Well, thank you, Laurie. And Jeff Waddle says, Deep Roy is the twin brother of muscle relaxant Deep Heat. Fact. Anyway, back to the talons of Weng Chiang. So the woman is levitated, apparently by strings, according to Kirby. I don't see how he could possibly think that. It's magic. It is magic, clearly magic. The doctor and Leela turn up at the police station. And I think they're just reporting the attack. Oh, now, of course, one of the Chinese has got caught. Then a body is found floating in the Thames, and the very funny old lady who... delivers some incredible names, something about the worst I've seen in my puff or something like that, which is probably the quote I would have used if I could have been bothered to go and look for one. Yes, a horrible floater in the Thames. And then, of course... the captured Chinese is then interviewed by Chang, who gives him a little sweetie. Oh, what?
The old woman with no teeth.
Yes.
That's Patsy Smart.
She was
Miss Roberts in Upstairs, Downstairs.
Okay, thank you for that. Anyway, so...
She's been in Danger Man and Dixon of Doc Green, Zed
Marvelous.
Cars.
Oh, good. Anyway, so Chang gives the Chinese captured... a little tweety, a little sweetie, probably a jelly baby cut into little small bits. Anyway, it doesn't do him any good because he does a comedy death right there on the table. And
the best kind of death.
They're unable to work out at that time that Chang might have had something to do with it. Anyway, so meanwhile, Jago, I always call him Jago for some reason, pokes around Chan's sort of dressing room and finds an alleged puppet in a box. Very lucky to survive that. And then the doctor and Leela go to the mortuary where they meet Lightfoot. And
I love just how immediately accepting he is of the doctor's authority.
Yeah.
It makes a change.
Questioned
all the time.
And after that is the point in which I said that the Chinese gets done in by the thorn, the
master.
What?
back in Dr. Lightfoot's coroner's office. Nice anachronism that they have simply covered up all of the electrical outlets with various coverings so you don't know they're there, except if you know they're there.
And that has absolutely nothing to do with the story.
Also, in another scene on the streets, they had asked for everyone to move their cars. One person did move their car, so they got a load of hay dumped all over their car. That's what that haystack in the middle of the street is. That's a car.
Splendid, right. Anyway, so like I said, a Janus Thorn, isn't it? That's what we're talking about. The Chinese chap gets done in by a Janus Thorn that's a bit hairy. I don't remember the Janus Thorns in the previous story being as hairy as that, but it's just pretty hairy Janus Thorn. And the doctor sort of tells her off for using the Janus Thorn. They said, he was going to kill you. And of course, he's all right about it after that. And then they go down to the sewers and get chased by a comedy rat. End of episode one.
First that.
And why is it not playing? Right. Episode two.
Part two.
Begins with them getting chased by a comedy rat. And then they get out of the sewers. The sewers must have been particularly smelly. They didn't mention this. It must have been particularly bad at that particular time. They're pretty smelly now, so imagine in those days it would have been even worse. And obviously more chance of catching stuff as well. So, yeah, it's funny that you see old Jago sort of going around the bowels of the theatre with a Gert cigar. It was thought as a slight fire hazard. I think even in those days they might have said no smoking in certain areas, but there you go.
People used to put lighted candles on their Christmas trees too.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay, I'll give you that one, Mary. The doctor, meanwhile, returns to the police station. Chang tries to hypnotize Jago with some comedy eye sort of special effects. Quite as good as the comedy eye special effects they've used in previous attempts at sort of eye sort of special effects, like they have, you know, remember they had they painted the eyelids with that reflective stuff in the previous story, which I think was quite a bit more effective. Obviously, couldn't be bothered to use that particular one. And so Jago gets hypnotized, and then
obviously not all the scenes which are supposedly in the theater were actually filmed in the theater, because like the little floor with the trapdoor and things like that.
Yeah, that doesn't matter though, does it? And then we finally see him go down the trapdoor, like you said, and we meet Marcus Grill, aka is it Weng Chiang?
Yes.
Wearing some very strange stuff. Very interesting costume he had. Didn't see the point of the hat. Unless, of course, he's sort of in the dark and he's wearing his cloak over his metal head.
It's kind of a homage to Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, yes, it is. Okay. Point to Kirby.
Thank you.
I didn't see that one. That was quite good. I didn't see that one coming. Yes, well done. So we meet him. He's a bit of the stereotypical madman. He reminds me a little bit of, bear in mind, it's another Robert Holmes story in Caves of Androzani. You know, what was his name in Caves? The masked sort of bloke in Caves of Androzani? No? Hello? Anybody there?
I don't remember.
Sharaz Jek. There you go. Sharaz Jek from Caves of Androzani.
Yeah, they are very similar, aren't they? And I have a friend here in the Atlanta area who does lots of cosplay, and he's done both Magnus Greel and Charis.
Charis
whatever
Jack,
the,
yes.
Yeah.
Charis Jack.
And he's done both those characters. Really well done costumes.
Oh, good. I forgot what I was going to say now. Oh, yeah, of course. So Leela, her reaction later on in the story to pulling off the mask wasn't quite the same as Perry's reaction.
Oh, wow. Master?
What?
We have someone watching who I didn't know has ever watched us live, Tim Drury.
Oh, better behave myself then. I've got my tie on.
Yeah, he was going to, a year ago, he was going to be coming here to go see the eclipse with us. And he got,
Kirby,
unfortunately, had some issues and
he had
lost
some tissues.
His passport.
He had some tissues. Okay, I better tidy the room up then,
Tim.
Quickly. What?
Yes,
maybe
I'm
I should go
hi,
offline.
Tim.
Hi, Tim.
I've got a fly swatter. Is that any good? It was actually bought for swatting wasps. Didn't get many, to be fair. Back to the story.
What about Ant-Man?
What about Ant-Man?
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Shut up. Right. where do we get up? Oh, yeah. So they go back to the mortuary and have some further conversations with Lightfoot and end up going back to Lightfoot's house. And I do love these sort of atmospheric Victorian street at night scenes. I think they're very, I just said atmospheric, didn't I? They actually do, you do feel that they've done a very good job of that. They've probably borrowed one of the sets from one of the Sherlock Holmes productions at the time. And the costumes, funny enough. Yes, Kirby, I'm sure you're going to tell me something.
Well, I love Tom's doing all the little magic tricks to Jago.
Indeed,
pulling the scarves out and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was more of a Pertwee thing, that, wasn't it? The sort of the magic trick stuff, which I quite like.
And that's the scene where what Lillian was quoting came from, the trumpet voluntary thing.
Got some stuff coming through on the comment feed. Lillian, Laurie says, talking about her puff with the constable. Jeff Waddle said, it's not a rat, it's a Victorian hamster. and then Laurie next posted an emoji of a hamster. Ian Kirk says, it's script for the audio.
Yeah, don't read that.
But then he says, this is my 300th audio feedback.
Hey!
Yes.
Oh.
Wow, indeed. So that deserves some sort of celebrity guest on your audio feedback, I think, Ian. I think we should try and arrange that somewhere along the line. Ian Kirk says, the special effect in this story later had its own series called Roland Rat. Of course, Roland Rat does indeed have Doctor Who connections. There was a little sort of skit that involved Colin Baker and Roland Rat somewhere along the line. I think that's when Roland Rat became a BBC character, because it started off on
what
ITV.
What the heck is Roland Rat?
Shut your face.
Oh,
look, go on YouTube and Google, and type in Doctor Who Roland Rat, and you'll come up with the scene that that Roland Rat was in relation to a sort of preview for Doctor Who. Ian Kirk will know what I'm talking about. So will Tim Drury, and so will Jeff Waddle, sadly.
Oh, okay. Now that I see a picture of Roland Rat, I've seen him. I didn't know he had a name.
Fair enough. Right then, now moving on. So where have we got up to? Have we got up to the scene where the Doctor realises that Jago has been hypnotised? And then we see Chang riding in a carriage with who's he riding with? With Mr. Sin. Oh yeah, and Marcus Grill. And then we see that brilliant scene where there's a spread of food. It's far too big for the three of them.
Yes, one of my most favourite scenes of all. Yeah.
And obviously Louise Jameson's amazing acting abilities to consume this food in a savage way. Now, this is a point in which Kirby's going to tell us that it wasn't actually real food. It was actors.
It looks
food.
Like real food to me.
Yeah.
You've seen the size of that leg, that turkey leg. It's about five. It's actually size of a turkey. I somehow think that's probably not really that big.
Now, when she jumps out of the window, that's not her. That's their regular stunt person.
What, Terry Walsh? Terry Walsh?
I think so.
You think so? Slightly more inaccurate, sort of, or unsure that you normally are about your facts there, Kirby.
I'll find out.
I'm sure you will. Good grief. Anyway,
the
then we see.
Lightfoot plays it, you know, so wanting to not embarrass his guest
yeah.
and wanting to, you know, be the you know, I don't know, just the stand-up guy.
Yeah, just joins in with it. Yeah. Then there's obviously these scenes outside where Chang is carrying around Mr. Sin, and there's also a scene where we see the spook, the ghost, in the bowels of the theatre, while the Doctor and Jago are poking around. I can't remember. What was that ghost? What was the explanation for it again? Hello? Anybody there?
It's just to scare people away from Grill's hideout.
Oh, it was a
hologram.
Hologram, that's it. Also, early days of holograms in dramas, I think. In fact, before the actual hologram was invented. Yes, Kirby.
No, the hologram was invented before this. Not very long before this. But
not very long. Is that what she said?
I'd forgotten about this.
You did?
Michael Spice, who is Magnus Grill,
yeah,
was the voice of Morbius.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Wow. Didn't know that one. Not going to point for that one, but it's very good. So, meanwhile, Leela is left behind at Lightford's house, where the Doctor is poking around the theatre, and then a sort of shadowy figure starts lurking around. The Doctor chases the shadowy figure and nearly comes a cropper by way of a rope. And course, the shadowy figure gets away. Lightfoot goes out into the garden because he suspects something's going on. Of course, they're trying to steal back the time cabinet, wasn't it? Is that what the Lightfoot had? And they had this pathetic little wax key that was... You really think if someone's going to invent a time cabinet, what they're going to do is have a key for it that's easily broken. I'm sure Kirby will come up with an explanation for that. And then,
maybe
of course,
it has to be crystalline. I don't know.
No. Anyway, Leela opens the door up, and there's Mr. Sin looking very sinister. Now, most Doctor Who companions would have screened the head off, but she just looks at him, which I quite liked. I liked the fact that they didn't make Leela too much of a scaredy cat, because when she did scream, of course, when she was being attacked by that giant Roland rat, it had a bit more of a gravitas. So, anyway, yeah. So she gets attacked by... she throws a knife in his neck, which is quite a violent scene, I suppose you'd call it for this day and age. Lightfoot, I don't know if he's fainted or he's just got knocked out, because he's on the floor. Chan runs off, and what's her name? Leela has a little bit of a scrap with Mr. Sin. And when she runs off, she gets reunited with the Doctor, and they hide around the corner. And it's very, very cold when they film this, because you can see their breath in the air. I suppose Kirby must have noticed that one.
Yes.
Yes. So, the BBC obviously made the most of the props they paid for and did a few night scenes with the horses and the carriage. Yes.
The location footage was all filmed in the middle of December 1976.
Yeah, so I thought it might have been by the way.
13th to the 16th. No, 17th for some.
Yeah, I thought it might because it was very cold. You could see it was very, very cold. Obviously, it looks like Lightfoot's actually been knocked out because the Doctor puts an ice pack on his head. The time cabinet is still in situ at this point, and the Doctor knows what it is. And he manages to put a few things together, realizing who may be involved in this particular thing.
Master?
Yes?
Magnus Grill makes references to the time agents because he's from the 51st century, which is Captain Jack's time.
Indeed he is, yes. Is that the end? You're just trying to be a bit of a smart aleck then, aren't you? Yes. What we forgot to mention properly is that girls are being kidnapped and basically fed. Their life essence is being fed to Grill, who's sort of wasting away, and he needs the life forces of these young girls. Why young girls and not young men? I don't quite understand that.
It's
thing.
Not really said. It just seems
just
to be
sexist.
Easier to collect. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe think it's a bit more scary that it's girls and not boys. I don't know. They could have made it even scarier and just said, because it's a children's program, essentially, that they get young children and get their life essence. That would have been particularly... Mary Whitehouse would have loved that.
I'm sure she had things to say about this one.
I'm sure she did. Anyway, so that's basically what is it. He sends Chang out to find young girls. Of course, Chang's saying, oh, they keep going missing. They're going to suspect things. We can't just keep taking young girls. But he does what he's told because he believes that he's going to get something out of it at the end of it.
Are we about to have the scene where Leela is being grabbed by the ankle by the giant carpet?
the doctor manages to get his hand on an elephant gun. I thought the doctor didn't like guns. He does on this occasion. He's quite impressed by this elephant gun. And, of course, we know what he's going to use that for. Leela, meanwhile, finds, or I think she spies Chang abducting a young girl with terrible makeup. And she follows him into the theatre and then pretends to be the girl, the captured girl. She sort of hides and pretends dead. To be dead, sorry.
You see, having captured girls means also that's a good plot way of getting Leela into the.
No, I suppose you're right there, Debbie. I like that one. I'm going to give you a point. I hadn't even considered that one, yes. But law short term, maybe they could have said they capture boys on one scene and they'll capture any boy. That's a girl. Okay, I managed to swap myself for that one. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a girl. Right, so okay, I'll give you a point for that anyway. So she gets herself sort of kidnapped while the doctor and Lightfoot ride in a little dinghy in the Thames, which is quite a cool thing. Greel has a little prod of the specimens that has been brought to him by Chang. He's impressed with one of them and not another one. He makes a comment about Leela's muscles, which was quite amusing. And then he puts one of the girls, not Leela obviously, in the cabinet and... some red stuff starts swirling around and
she's Leela, drained.
Yeah, Leela turns the machine off, but not in time, unfortunately, for the little girl. And she escapes the room, climbs into the sewers, and like Kirby said, at some point, when after the Chinese have taken away what they need to take away, and sort of obviously the girl that was replaced by Leela gets out and is a bit confused by the whole situation. So she gets, like you say, grabbed by a comedy rat, shall we say. I think we said this earlier. It was indeed a comedy rat. And that was the cliffhanger to episode four.
And then that's followed by the scene where Louise was kind of exposed a little bit.
Yeah, are we talking about the nipple exposure?
Yes.
Yes. I thought you might mention that, Kirby. And you didn't let me down there. Yes, indeed. In the scene where the doctor rescues Leela with the elephant gun, kills the rat, actually. And, yes, Leela is... Well, Louise Jameson, they clearly could have put some more clothes on her because it doesn't leave a lot to the imagination. Obviously, when I was young, after this series went out, and when Louise Jameson left Doctor Who, she was in a brilliant drama series called Tenko, where you saw her boobs anyway, and obviously it's nothing we'd not already seen before. Now everybody's going to start Googling Tenko now, aren't they?
I love Tenko.
That was cracking series, wasn't it, Debbie? Yeah. Right, point for you for agreeing with me. Well done.
I've never seen it.
Stephanie Beecham was in it, Kirby, in Tenko. It was her first sort of... did you say who to Stephanie Beecham?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
It's hard to get points by agreeing with you, and we've never seen some of this stuff.
Stephanie Beecham was in Dynasty and the Colbys, or as you would call it, Dynasty and the Colbys, playing Joan Collins' sister... And I'm a bit appalled that you Americans had never heard of Stephanie Beecham. So you deserve that point. Actually, Mary deserves a point of as well, because she didn't admit to knowing who Stephanie Beecham was either. So it's a point deductive for Mary. Okay. Stephanie Beecham was in Tenko.
I thought Stephanie Beecham was in
Tenko. Oh, shut up. You're not going to any points of that. You were going to say it.
In America.
Well, she was in what?
She was in that. She was in, obviously, Dynasty, but she was also in other things
Colby's.
Like Sequest and all sorts
yes,
of things.
No, yes, yeah. And she was also in... could have been Kate O'Mara was... I think she acted alongside Stephanie Beecham in Dynasty or Colby's, because I think she played one of Crystal's sisters. Not Crystal, sorry. Who did Joan Collins play?
Alexa. Dynasty, either.
Yeah. Be careful, Mary. Anyway, so like you say, Leela gets wrapped in a towel. To protect her dignity. Sadly, even though the studio is a bit warmer now, you can still see her nipples through her dry top. They really should have addressed this in the studio, because this obviously is a bit gratuitous for this time of obviously the end of the 60s, 67 you would expect to see a half naked woman, but not a 1977. So So I'm trying to paraphrase here and try and fill gaps because I'm just skipping through these scenes that don't really have much bearing on the story. So, right, so there's a lovely scene which,
every
of course...
Every scene has a bearing on the story.
I'll be quiet. There's a scene, of course, she then is put in some more clothes, and, of course, the blokes are quite impressed with how lovely she looks. She looks a little bit like she should be selling flowers on the street corner, actually. Sort of Eliza Doolittle-like. And I think there's a point in which the doctor tries to teach her how to play draughts or checkers or whatever you want to call it.
Checkers.
Drafts.
Checkers.
Drafts.
Let's find drafts.
right.
But
so,
there's no F in D-R-A-U-G-H-T.
Be quiet. Right. So anyway, so then we go into the big show for Chang, and the doctor's in the royal box. Waiting to watch the show, and I quite like this scene actually because obviously Chang's going to try a few of his special tricks that make it look like the doctor's going to get done in, like shooting the card. Yes,
this has one of the scenes where I'm real mixed with the racist thing where Chang goes, one of us is yellow. Don't know if let's put that in to make fun of racism or if it was being
Kirby,
racist.
In 1977, it wasn't an issue.
That's how I took it.
Yeah.
It wasn't an issue in 1977.
I know.
You know, it was an appalling time for that, you know, things like that. Nothing was allowed then. You weren't allowed to be anything more than just a heterosexual white person. You know, that was it. If you weren't that, you were going to really get some stick somewhere along the line, you know. So yeah, he moves the card closer and closer to his head, and when you know, and of course the trick's brilliant, it works. And then the next scene after we see some waking up Mr. Sins, we have the box trick where the doctor just walks out the back of the box, and then he puts the sword through the box for his assistants in there, and then when it comes back, there's a dead man in it. And of course, Chan looks completely shocked by this and tries to leg it. And he runs into the sewers. But of course, the rat is not dead. I got it wrong. I should perhaps deduct points for myself. He's badly injured. He's getting better, like you say, Kirby.
I was going to say that you were wrong about the rat.
Yeah, but
you didn't
want any points deducted, did you?
I was afraid you would deduct points from me.
Yeah. And what's the cliffhanger of that? Oh, yeah, the cliffhanger is, they've got the time clarinet, and they go off laughing or cackling into the darkness at the end of the episode.
I know.
Ian Kirk says, the special effect in this story later had its own series. I've done that one. Well, I haven't had any new comments come through. What sort of blooming podcast is this? Right, so yeah, so they go cackling off into the distance.
No, there's a whole bunch of new comments that you haven't talked about.
Oh, maybe it's because I haven't refreshed the screen. Oh, yeah, so they are. Okay, right then. So Laurie Nix says, it's a good knife. Yes, good point. And Ian Kirk has posted the link for the Colin Baker and Roland Rat.
I'll watch that later.
And Jeff Waddle says, it says below that Laurie Nix and Lillian Robin are watching with me. I hope not, because Sunday night is a bath night for school tomorrow, and I'm sitting on the couch bollock naked ready to get in.
School tomorrow? How old is Jeff?
And well, you can go to school anytime, Mary. Laurie Nick said, we're not watching you, just near you, dearie. And Lillian Robin said, ew. Laurie Nick's young plump girls cuz of the Fu Manchu stereotype. Yeah, talking about the racist stuff, isn't it? I used to love those Fu Manchu films. Laurie Nix says, comedy rug. Then Jeff Waddle says, drafts on my couch here waiting for my bath to fill up. And Laurie Nix said, are you heating up the tea kettle? Sure taking a long time.
Yes. I was singing that myself.
Oh, dear. Right. Something's gone down the wrong way, so I'm going to start coughing in a minute. Anyway, so, right. Then we see the inner sanctum of the Wang Chiang thing with the big dragon. Quite a good set, this, to be fair.
Yes.
And then they all sort of, all the Chinese minions bow down. Mr. Sin has a throne now. And, of course, they get told off by Wen Chiang or Marcus Greil for letting them down and offered a part of a jelly baby, a red part of a jelly baby. And of course, this allows the Chinese chap to have a particularly good comedy death. I thought it was quite impressive that. And it looked like he had toothache, actually, but there you go. It's a comedy death. And going back into the theatre again, where Jago and Lightfoot meet up and team up.
And of course, they don't actually meet each other and do the double act thing until episode 5.
I know, it's a bit of a disappointment, really, isn't it? But on Big Finish, see more. They were, yes. They did miss a trick to not making a series with them at the time, really, didn't they?
They had considered it even back then. They were so good.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Doctor is... he starts sort of going under the theatre and finds the dying Chang, who's staying alive by way of will and taking lots of opium.
Is he disco dancing if he's staying alive?
Like having Andy on the blimmin' show. However, right, that's minus two. That's so blimmin' awful.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. And the funny thing about his death, he waffles on about it. The Doctor asks him a plain question, and instead of just answering the question, he waffles on, then sort of collapses and reaches out and writes something on the floor in his finger.
I thought he just pointed to the Doctor's shoes.
Oh, pointed to the shoes.
Yeah.
Why? He could have told him, Mary. He had time to sort of open
his mouth. He was trying. He was saying, boot.
No, he's just going, I can see my ancestors. Shut up and tell us. You know, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. Keep going. You know, it's a Chinese riddle or something.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lightfoot and Jago make it into the inner sanctum, and there's a point in which Magnus Greil is grabbing Jago by the sort of chin with his sort of manky fingers, and they get, instead of killed, obviously would have been a shame to kill them at this point, put downstairs in the dungeons. The Doctor finds the key to the time cabinet, and how do they, of course, then in the dungeons they find these unconscious girls, and they can't be older than 16, apparently. They look about 25, but there you go. And then, of course, they find the, what's that lift thing called, Debbie?
It's a dumbwaiter.
Dumbwaiter, that's it. And they climb in the dumbwaiter, go downstairs and get immediately caught again, which is quite amusing itself.
I love the scene. I love the scenes where Leela is trying various sports equipment.
The cricket bat and then the golf club.
I like that bit.
And she nearly gets caught by the golf club, and then she does get caught by some Magnus chloroform. Magnus, this is where she pulls a mask off, and then we see Sharaz Jek's face.
Melting.
But of course, she sees the face.
Then reuse that same mask later.
I don't know. Anyway, she sees the face and then immediately faints. After seeing the face, of course. And there's a brilliant scene in which he's sat in the chair and the Doctor walks in and just sort of acts as if it's quite normal that he's sat there. Hello. Sat there. Always happens in episode 6 that Tom Baker's Doctor has a bit of a funny sort of tete-a-tete with the main villain of the story. And about 15 Chinese sort of minions come in with their slapping sort of weapons into their hands. You know, it's quite funny. I love that scene. And then... the Doctor offers a jelly baby. Of course, this jelly baby isn't particularly poisonous. And when they sort of carry Leela in, they're very careful trying to carry her, but by not touching her boobs, the Doctor starts throwing around the key just to get them to let her go. And he uses that method to make them take them to the inner sanctum. And but unfortunately, when they get to the inner sanctum, there's a point in which Greil gets the upper hand. Of course, Sin sneaks into, because he said what it was, beware of the eye of the dragon or something like that. Wasn't that what Chan said?
Yes, beware the eye of the dragon, yeah. Yes.
Because obviously that he could have just said, the eye of the dragon, Doctor, has got a strange laser thing in it, so try and keep out of its way. It would have been easier than saying, beware the eye of the dragon. But anyway, Sin climbs up. And gets a shot at the Doctor. So he's unconscious for a bit, gets taken downstairs, and then wakes up eventually. And yeah, they sort of, I think, was it, they shepherd the girls away, didn't they, the unconscious girls. And yes. There's a point in which Sin can't resist the temptation to shoot and start shooting everything in sight. And
he's such a pig.
Yeah, the girls wake up at some point as well. And then there's Leela is tied up and gagged. And then he starts trying to extract her life force, because, of course, being Leela, being that they need her for future episodes of Doctor Who, it didn't do her any damage. What it could have done, though, Kirby, at this point, is changed her eye colour so she didn't have to wear those contact lenses.
Yeah. Well, they just wait until the next story.
Correct.
I was going to say, I think that does change.
The Doctor saves her by throwing... What did he throw at the... It was a knife or something, wasn't it, at the panel? Oh, no, it was an axe or something like that. He rescues Leela, and, of course, like I say, Sin sort of goes a bit mad, starts shooting everything, including... Magnus Greel, or at Magnus Greel, I should say. And then I think the Doctor rigs the time cabinet. And, he manages to get into the sort of machine where all the life force is extracted. Why did he go into that machine? Oh, he gets shoved in there by the Doctor. The Doctor murders Magnus Greel. And, of course...
the Doctor has murdered millions of people.
Millions?
So, no big deal. Uh-huh.
Of course, then his coat just crumples to the floor, and that's the end of him. And then there's a little battle between Sin and, obviously some mannequin. It's not real anybody in there. The Doctor and Lightfoot and Jago, and then the Doctor takes his battery out. And that's the end of him. At the end, the last scene, of course, has... Jago wearing a sling. Lightfoot wearing a sling and Jago having a bandage around his head just to indicate that they got a little bit hurt. And they all say goodbye, and we think there might be a spin-off series, which there isn't. That's the Talons of Weng Chiang. I suppose just to get it over and done with, you can't really fault this story, because it is what it is. It's one of the best, most cherished Doctor Who stories of all time. I find I don't like sort of darkly lit dramas, but... I don't mind this one, to be fair. I think it works really, really well for this. It sort of takes it out. It feels like it takes it out of the studio environment. It's cleverly lit, very cleverly lit story. And beautifully acted, excellent characters, memorable characters indeed. And it was a bit of a joy to watch. And I'm going to ask Kirby what you think of it, because I'm eager to hear what Debbie says, because she must like it. She watched it twice. Kirby, what did you think?
I've always loved the story from the moment I first saw it.
Okay, and what do you think then? I'm going to shake. Carry on, Kirby. I'm going to shake.
This is one of the ones that I first saw in the student center at my university. So I don't remember if there was anyone else watching with me, but I just absolutely loved it from the beginning. I didn't really think about the racist parts of it back then.
No, well, none of us did.
Until I had... happen to have Chinese kids. They actually are mixed about it. Fred Fred watched this with me a couple of weeks ago when we watched it, and she enjoys this one as well, and she just understands the that's the way television was back then.
Yep, absolutely. It's not necessarily make it right, but I don't think we should, sorry Kirby, I don't think we should just brush it to one side because it was an ignorant time. I still think that the programs and films that were on in the past that may have been racist were still part of history and their literature at the end of the day. And I think they're important that we should still enjoy them, and not enjoy them because of PC. There's a series in the 1970s called Love Thy Neighbor, in which as a black neighbor living next to a white neighbor, and basically most of the time it was Rudy Walker actually played the black neighbor.
It was
brilliant.
Wrong.
And he always got the upper hand over the white neighbor, but it's depicted as being racist now because of the language they used to refer to each other. But I still think it was one of the best comedies and most brilliant comedies to bring societies together in some ways from the 1970s. Perhaps the language they use in it wasn't that good. But, I mean, watching Roots, obviously they had to use that sort of language in Roots because they were depicting slavery and the barbaricness of sort of American history from 200 years ago. But sometimes it's acceptable and sometimes you just have to live with it. It was innocent in some ways. Innocent racism, I suppose you'd call it, wouldn't you? So it wasn't any harm meant in it.
Anyway, if I may continue.
Oh, am I interrupting you? Point for me.
Yeah, you interrupted me.
Get in.
Fred will watch this one. If I say I'm going to watch Talents of Wing Chiang, she'll drop everything. She'll watch it with me.
Be careful. I hope she's not carrying anything hot. That could be a bit dangerous.
Julia, the geek daughter, though, has a slightly less fond view of this one. The racism bothers her a little more.
Yeah.
I can't get an exact... I even tried to ask her today what exactly her thoughts are, and she just didn't want to talk about. My youngest, I don't think, has seen this one, so.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah. I love this.
Good.
It's one of my absolute favorite stories of all time.
Good. Here we go. Debbie, what do you think?
Well, the first time I watched it, I did kind of binge watch it, and I was a bit shocked about the makeup and things like that, but I didn't watch it to go, oh my God, that's racist, oh, 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 that's racist, because I know what British TV was like, you know. I lived through the latter part of the just general bigotedness and racism and the casualness of it all. I remember that.
No worse than US TV.
I remember the big backlash that happened in the early 80s and things like that. So yeah, that was beside itself. But I know everybody had, I think because everybody's bigged it up, I was expecting more. Mm-hmm. So the first watch, I didn't enjoy it as much as I have some of the other stories with Leela as the companion. But then I watched it again over the past week, sort of one a night, and paid close attention. I didn't do my old trick of writing notes and pausing every 5 minutes to write notes and things like that. But I did watch it with much more interest and having known the story from binge watching it. And I actually enjoyed it a hell of a lot more than I did the first time round. So I think it's a great story, very funny. And also there's some genuine moments where you go, oh my God. And like the bit when the mask came off, that was brilliant makeup work. That was fantastic. I mean, you knew you were expecting something underneath that, but the melty face was brilliant. I didn't see that bit. And I like the social mores that were going on around it as well with Leela.
Social mores. Ooh.
What?
Very posh, eh? Alan Butcher. Social mores.
I don't temper my lexicon when I'm that. You know what I'm like. But I really enjoyed it, and I want to watch it again. I want to show it to Tom because I think it's of its time, but it's also a banging story. So yeah, it's definitely got thumbs up from me. But if it had been a couple of weeks ago, yeah, when we were going to do it, it wouldn't have been a thumbs up. So it's a grower.
I think you're categorizing of the story as a banging story. That's what she said. Apparently, not quite. Having watched some documentary on Carry On films,
a banger,
banging
master.
Sorry. Yes.
I was incorrect as far as the person who jumped out the window wearing Leela's outfit was Stuart Fell.
I thought it might have been him.
Yeah.
But did you say you were incorrect?
Yes.
Point deducted then. Excellent. All right, so
we thought it was you. Well, we thought it was Terry Walsh. Remember?
Oh, we thought it was Terry Walsh.
We did, apparently. Yeah.
Okay, let's have a look at the comments before we get the. This is what they do when they build up. You build up on a show to the main event. Have a little bit of a. A side trip, because obviously I was at a comedy show on Friday night, and it was quite good. Met a couple of people, quite good comedians. One of which is a particularly good actor, isn't he, Deb? No, right, fair enough.
What did you watch? Was it Omid Djalili?
Yes, Omid Djalili. He's a very, very good actor. I'm surprised he hasn't been in Doctor Who, actually.
I love him. He's brilliant.
I'm sure he will be in Doctor Who at some point, because he's very good. Lots of American
British
stuff too.
Doctor Who at some point.
Yeah, I think
it's kind of a rite of passage. Doctor Who, Casualty, EastEnders.
Has he been in EastEnders then?
No, not yet.
He's more of a film actor, isn't he? Moving back, sorry.
Yeah, he was last in Mamma Mia, the last thing I saw him
in. Was he in Mamma Mia?
He's in Mamma Mia 2. He's the guy. I'm looking at the passports when they're waiting for the ferry.
I have a picture taken with him. Right then, so yeah, comments coming through. Lauren Nick says, Dragon laser guns are clunky but still pretty cool. Jeff Waddle said, I like my bath roasting hot, so ran it and add two or three boiled kettles full as well. Bloody hell.
Hellfire. I thought Tom liked
Hellfire indeed. Laurie Nix, Kirby is at negative 42 points now. Jeff Waddle says, wish I could find a dungeon with 25-year-old girls in it. Jeff!
Wait, what do you expect? It's quite tame for him.
Yeah. Laurie Nix.
Yes, it is.
Laurie Nix says, put your waggling eyebrows away, Jeff. And Alan T. Butcher said, out tonight. Hope you got my feedback. Out tonight? Appalling. We haven't had a show for 15 years, and then you decide to go out the night we do. Anyway, right. So, I think I did, actually, Alan. I haven't checked, but I've had some little notifications, so I think there's stuff there for me to sort through. Right then, listeners, you've been waiting for this bit.
Dun, 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 dun.
No, hang on, I've got to find the appropriate... There we go. Mary, what did you think?
Well, I hate to disappoint everybody, I'm on board with loving it.
Oh! Yay. Oh, yeah. My God!
An interesting thing that I read was that a few stories back, I think it was during The Deadly Assassin, when they were filming that, that the head of the BBC was taking around the new showrunner, producer, whatever job that Hinchcliffe had. Mm-hmm. Well, he was going around the studio while they were filming and introducing the new guy, which came as a complete surprise to Robert Holmes and Hinchcliffe and Tom Baker. As the story goes, Hinchcliffe turned around and told the production department, okay, from here on out, spend everything you can, do everything you can. You know, we're going to go out in a blaze. And apparently they did. They spent a lot of money. They had gorgeous sets for these shows. And apparently that really pinched the budget from there on out for a while. So I'm expecting to see stories that are not quite as lavishly produced after this.
The next showrunner is Graham Williams.
Graham Williams. I thought I remembered the last name being Williams. I didn't remember that his first name. Two of my most favorite scenes in this whole thing were actually written as fillers, because the episodes were running short. And one of them is the Leela and Professor Lightfoot eating scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love to death. This is the glory of Holmes's writing.
Yeah.
And the other filler scene that was written to flesh out an episode is the dumb waiter scene with Jago and Lightfoot, which again is absolutely delightful. I think what I enjoyed most about all of this was less the story, because the story is actually pretty run of the mill. But the writing, there is so many funny lines written through this, so many memorable things, that's what I kind of focused on, because I have seen this before. Focused on the wonderful lines and had a great time. So, yeah, I really liked it.
Wow. How about that then, listeners?
Yeah, how about that?
So we do actually have two bits of feedback from Ian Kirk, one dating the 29th of July, which hasn't been played yet. So I'm a bit curious as to whether it's for the same story or not. So I might have to play it either way. But in the meantime, oh, my goodness, got Alan Butcher as well. Ooh.
Now remember, we've got two comment threads. Because I started one, 3 weeks ago?
I'm a bit confused by this feedback. I need to check what I last sent Debbie, because I've got some loads of stuff from Alan T. Butcher, but I can't understand why.
Alan Butcher said that he expanded on his, so maybe the first one is the short version.
You go with the later one.
And the later one is the expanded version.
The last thing that was set through to Mrs. Melrose. Oh, that's not. I'm looking at the wrong person. I'm looking at Annalise Butcher. What's your name? Debbie, isn't it? Debbie.
Yeah, something like that.
All right, what did I send to you? It was called Robot. Robots or the illegitimate child of Agatha Christie and Frank Herbert. That's the last one you did.
That's the last one. Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at that right now.
Yeah, so I've done that one. Well, it's like it's not been opened though. It's a bit weird. Right then. So, so with that in mind,
read it out.
You definitely read it out. Do you want to read it again?
What, the last one?
No. Maybe Delrose, isn't it? Maybe Delrose. Right. So let's have a look at this one then.
Okay. Oh my days. Okay. God, I better have a drink after this one. Never seen rats served with onions in all my puff for Jago and Lightfoot Origins. Dear 20 megabyters. The Talons of Wen Chiang is, of course, a closely studied prequel of the long-running Big Finish audio series Jago and Lightfoot, featuring the eponymous pair that were perhaps most famous for being short-time companions of the Sixth Doctor. Is it Nyssa? Is that how you say it?
Yes, it is. Well done, Debbie. Do you want a point for that?
No, I haven't met her as a companion yet properly, so I don't know it very well. Sorry. Nyssa's Jill's fiancé and my Australian cousin, Magnus Grealty Butcher of Brisbane, is a satirical representation of imperialism, being an outsider who imposes himself on ancient China, but who is twisted by the means he employs and becomes dependent, leeching ever more intensely off those around him. His chief lackey, Li Shengcheng, the bureaucratic civil service of this imperium, is slavishly loyal and ostensibly effective, but comes unstuck quickly when matched with the rebellious force that so often manifests as the Doctor. The death of the Thousand Cuts in Chang's act is perhaps signalling the tendency for such services to be underfunded from the complacency centre of a decadent empire. The giant rat shows how sometimes local powers are used and empowered to defend an imperial hegemony. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. I apologise.
Hegemony.
We'll go with that one.
Hegemony. Do, 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 do. Hegemony. Do, 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 do. Hegemony. Do, 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 do. Do, carry on, sorry.
The Peking populace is very much like the sort of local military forces used to maintain power, but which can easily end up out of control. Jago and Lightfoot are beacons of virtue as manifestations of popular arts and practical science. The climactic confrontation has the feel of the sort of siege which can develop in the latter days of the degradation of imperial collapse and ends in an apparent complete cellular collapse of our imperial personification. Very nicely done, Alan.
Personification.
It should be noted It should be noted that while some might suggest that the tumescent rat is unconvincing, who is to say that a rat made so much larger would not look like that? After all, they say a rhino is pretty much just the same architecture as an antelope that has evolved to be a bit bigger. Also, we should recognise there was a huge golden drag on the budget too. Furthermore, who is to say that a Chinese person whose life is extended by centuries would not end up looking more like he was a white man with rigid yellow makeup?
No, dear.
We also learn that Sir Keith Gold started out as a theatre manager before getting involved in nuclear power and also General Finch had a shady post posing as a magical Chinese fellow long before getting caught up with dinosaurs in the golden age of the 1970s. Yes. Or was that the 1980s?
Indeed. Sorry, it's just something's just come through on the news.
Finally, dissident Time Lord Morbius Grill did escape his jar, only to become disfigured by injudicious Sigma experiments after changing his name to Magnus. All in all, The Talons of Wen Chiang is a highly derivative but exciting horror thriller, which succeeds in pretty much every way. Perhaps because the core cast are so well drawn at this time, once again, many of the guest cast are given full rein to excel both in acting and character terms. Casting and portrayals here are, of course, not without valid controversy. I am, however, not inclined to guilt nor awkward when viewing these reprehensible choices realised within an otherwise exemplary accomplishment. I consider it to be an object lesson that the society I was born into has advanced significantly in these areas, but we should remember not in all respects, and the forward progress is not guaranteed. So we should embrace the opportunity to recognise the greatness which is not precluded by these deeply flawed choices, and we should recognise we may not be free of other such flaws even when we achieve something of real value. This series is perhaps six episodes. Oh shit, I put Siri on. Go away, Siri.
Did Debbie swear then, everyone? Did I hear a little yes, utterance of a swear word? Oh, dear.
I do apologise. Sorry. Lose a point. Dear. This S-E-R-I-A-L is perhaps six episodes packed in, but this makes it a rich feast of intense narrative. Next up, Doctor Who to the Lighthouse or Who's Afraid of Virginia Rutan? Alan E. Butcher.
Okay, well done, Debbie. Yes, well done. Apart from the swear word. Very good. Right. I have an email from Billy Kirk Brighton, which he says, I regret this. I've been drinking. My feedback, Adam. So here goes.
How you doing, 20 megabytes? Hey, I've been up town tonight. I've had something to sup, and I'm a bit boiled, that's why. Anyway, I won't try and critique this story too much. I'll just say this. Talons was absolute fab. It were ace. I loved it.
Ace? No, she
was
with
Sylvester
McCoy.
Like about this story? If you don't like this story, you're a proper pseudo fan. You know, you are. I mean, seriously, what's not to like about it? It's reminiscent of the Victorian era. It's got wonderful, beautiful characterizations of Jago and Lightfoot.
That's what I said.
And the Doctor in that wonderful kind of Sherlock Holmes kind of attire thing going on. And he showed his primal nature in when he said to Leela, "Ooh, I'd love to take you to the theatre looking like that." I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, this story was fabulous. And I think, in all honesty, in my opinion, this story kind of draws the curtain on the Victorian, on the golden era of Doctor Who. It really does. Because I think back in 1977, in 1978, I think the story's kind of waned a little bit, in my opinion. I wasn't as captivated from here on with Doctor Who back in the day. But I kind of kept at it from a distance. But the captivation wasn't there. But getting back to Talons, I thought this was a wonderful story. And, you know, the Palace Theatre and Lee Chang, is that his name? I can't remember. The guy that played the Chinese guy, the magician. Fabulous, great stuff. And, I just love this story. Yeah. Sorry for my lack of eloquence tonight. I'm a bit... pie in the sky.
A bit Andy Nunny.
It's the wine. Take care. Speak soon.
Lack of eloquence there. I'm not quite sure there was a lack of eloquence. And yeah, I just wondered, did you like the story at all? Just wondered if that might have been the case. Thank you very much, Billy. Always nice to hear from you. All right, then. Now we've got this from Jeff Waddle. My all-time favourite Who story. It was on transmission, still is, and probably always will be. It does not get any better than this. How about that, then, everyone? That deserves one of these, doesn't it?
Oh, when he likes something, that's a big deal.
Yes, indeed it is. Well, that was quite, remember that. But you might have said that last time we did a review on it, to be fair. Okay, right. So the next thing we've got to talk about is this.
Hello, Truth in the Black Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Talons and Wing Chai Yang by Robert Holmes. Like it's 1888. Tom Baker is still taking his role seriously, and Louise Jameson is always good.
Yeah.
It is an interesting story, so who gives a rat's bottom about special effects? BBC always does historical drama well. There's a little joke where the Doctor insists that Leela must be dressed properly. Then we see he has a Sherlock Holmes outfit.
Yeah.
There was a shortage of Chinese actors back then, so I don't think Talons is racially insensitive. Mr. Milligan, what do you think? This is not helping. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Nice to hear from you again. In fact, it's nice to hear from everybody again after such a long time.
Let me hear from him.
Pardon? Is it Laurie who puts quite a long post on one of your...
I haven't got there yet, Debbie. One thing at a time. Like having Kirby on the blimmin' show. Right, what else we got here?
There's two of us. Remember, with that the Goon Show thing,
yeah.
I'm one of the few Americans who knows what the Goon Show is.
No, you don't get anything for that because we've known for many years that fact. You keep on harking on about it. Right then, Lillian Robin, her of the legs, says, mana mana. And Laurie Nick said, smozzled.
Mana mana, I think is what she was, yeah.
Do you want any points deducted?
Now, Lillian's given us some feedback, too.
Yeah, all right. That's point deducted for Debbie. And a point deducted for Mary. For being impatient. And I can't be bothered to play the dick there.
She's helping.
Anyway,
yeah.
Laurie Nick says, snozzled. Then she says, I'll have three of what he's drinking. Foster's apparently lives in Australia. Laurie Nick says, mimosas for everyone. And then there's a little picture of a rat. Actually, I was being a bit sort of product placing there by saying Foster's. It actually was a nicer lager that came out of Australia that I used to like. However, I can't remember what it was called. But I do remember Foster's. Right then. So, yes, we have some more stuff that came through on one of Kirby's requests for feedback, probably the one that was originally posted on the 4th of August many years ago. Rob Lansdowne said, I absolutely love ratties. Robert McIntyre says, I'm with you, Kirby. Love this story. I was over the moon when I had the chance to talk with Louise about it at Hulanta. And then Laurie Nook said, I hate it when the fat old carpet falls on Leela. And then the more recent posting for a request for feedback comes up with Jeff Waddle repeating his thing about the best Who story of all time, bar none. Alan T. Bircher, we were postponed, but we wrote on. This was only the beginning. We studied closely. Feedback grew longer. Now the time is right. We will emerge and take our rightful place as the supreme reviewers of the Hooniverse. I think Tim Drury might have turned off by now. Laurie Nick says, hey, it's my long-winded opinion. Finally, well, today's anyway. Oh, my God, right, I'm giving that one to Debbie. Debbie?
Yeah?
Laurie Nick.
I haven't got anything up. Hang on.
Beg your pardon?
That's what she said.
I wasn't reading along. I'm sorry.
Oh, would you like me to send it to you, or would you want to open it up via the 20-megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join?
This is the latest feedback, yeah?
It's on, yes.
Yeah, Laurie Nicks from Laurie.
That's
yeah?
the oh. one. I'm going to sit back and listen.
Hey, it's my long-winded opinion, finally. Well, today's anyway.
Did you say finally or finally?
Finally.
Did you say finally, though?
I said finally.
She said finally.
Sorry. Carry on.
Hey, it's my long-winded opinion, finally. Well, today's anyway. Sent with, as Ringo would say, peace and love. Talons, a guilty pleasure. From childhood, I have loved the Victorian period. So when Doctor Who does Victorian, I am especially giddy. At first watch in about 1980, Talons was the near-perfect mash-up of penny dreadful tropes and eccentric caricatures, period costumes and sets, snappy dialogue and dialects, and excellent direction. This homage to almost every 19th, early 20th century fantasy character they could squeeze in is a cracking good yarn. It truly hits all of my sweet spots. So much so that back in the day it was easy to overlook, explain away or downplay the racist casting and overtones of the story. As much as I delight in the Doctor as Sherlock Holmes, Leela as Eliza Doolittle, allusions to the Phantom of the Opera, evil stage magicians and loquacious music hall impresarios, I cannot in good consciousness give this the one the 9 out of 10 classic rating that I would have as a teen. FYI, the ridiculous giant rat always deducts a point.
Aww.
Some refer to Talons as casually or subtly racist. Sorry, folks, that's like being a little bit pregnant. Yellowface is racist, regardless of expediency, tradition, or even parody. All dubious excuses in 1977. The year I came into the world. Trained in history, I understand and greatly appreciate context, but let's face it, historically accurate xenophobia does not excuse perpetuating the demeaning and demonising Fu Manchu makeup and stereotype in a show aimed at kids or others whose bigotry is reinforced by such depictions. Why do I suddenly hear a disembodied voice saying, Doctor Who is a science fiction fantasy television show?
All right, Doctor Who is a racist fantasy, what you just said. Was. Carry
meta-narrative, on. Meta-narrative, self-parody, and multivalence. Oh, God, another. We've got another Alan T. Butcher here. Are often brought up in defence of this beloved classic. True double meaning in characterisation and dialogue abounds, and in certain scenes falls just short of redemption. But then Tom Baker, playing an alien to whom race shouldn't matter, starts talking about little men and epicanthic eyebrows with delicious glee. You find yourself fervently hoping he's only making fun of Victorian bigots in front of Victorian bigots, yet you really fear that he isn't. To me, the contradictory nature of Talons is fascinating. Highly entertaining versus demeaning stereotypes, mostly great acting versus cringeworthy yellow face, a love letter to Victorian fantasy versus the imperialism, sexism, racism of the era, mutton leg sleeves versus visible nipples, etc. Rewatching this over the years with more enlightened eyes has engendered new and deeper food for thought, which, although uncomfortable, is not necessarily a bad thing. Yes, I know, as a sci-fi fantasy TV show of another decade, they can't be expected to get it correct every time, and damn it all, it's so much fun to watch. Nevertheless, they should have known better. Mm-hmm. Even though I get its many layered context, Talons is tarnished for me because of its racism, as is the subject matter it was based upon. Does this mean I now hate what was once one of my very faves? Hell no. For me, there's still too much to endear in both the serial and the time period. I'm not cherry-picking or turning a blind eye. If I want the pleasure, I'll have to accept the guilt and introspection that goes along with it.
That's more or less what I said. Thank you, Laurie. Thank you, Debbie. Debbie Melrose says, I have watched this twice now. I'm still in two minds like you. I don't know how Kirby Bartlett Sloan will take it, though. What, your opinion or the story? Okay. Jeff Waddle.
You know now.
Yeah. Jeff Waddle says, hey, I'm in two minds about it too. One mind says it's absolutely brilliant. The other one says it's astounding. Laura Nick says, time is fleeting.
It's fleeting.
Madness takes its toll.
Yeah. Alan T. Butcher said, I can very much appreciate your feelings, Laurie, though I do not feel troubled quite the same. I can understand it. I think fundamentally that you cannot correct the errors of the past without disregarding that which is good. Then we must recognise... Beg your pardon?
You want me to take over?
No, shut up. Then we must recognise the two can coexist in the same. The correction of something like the overtly racist noddy series of Enid Blyton seems highly justifiable because it is possible without altering the stories. Though you do have to wonder if future generations might abhor the straight substitution of black-skinned gollywogs and green-skinned goblins as a limp and futile attempt to sidestep a narrative inherently based in prejudice against the perceived problem group with a society. Of course. Within a society. Now you've put me right off. Of course, I will never understand why they could not cast my cousin Magnus Grill T. Butcher of Brisbane as a real Australian rather than a geezer from Croydon. Surely Rolf Harris would have done it, and that would have been fine at least. I don't think so. Laurie Nick says, what? Use funny talking pasty faced guys ain't all from England? Are you sure? Because I can't tell yous apart. Very funny, that Laurie Nix, isn't she? Lillian Robin says, great story, unfortunate use of the yellow-faced non-Asian actor playing Asian part, casual racism. I always cringe at that part because one of my best friends was born in China. One of my best friends was born in the Philippines, and I don't think she'd be particularly offended by it because... she wasn't even conceived anywhere near at the time of this racism. There you go. And she's a very easygoing person. But this is one of the greatest of the great Robert Holmes stories with the greatest double act ever with Jago and Lightfoot. Tom is having a blast. Not so sure about Louise having a good time, though, particularly in the sewer scene. But she was a trooper, got her nipples out and everything. No, sorry, she didn't say that. And she is so nice in real life. She is indeed very nice in real life. I have my picture taken with her on pride of place on my mantelpiece up there. So there you go. I think that's the end of that feedback thread, unless Kirby knows otherwise.
As far as I know.
Lillian Robbins says, oh, Debbie and I are the same age. So you're both 87. Amazing, Lillian. And Laurie Nick says, thank you, Debbie. You sound exactly like me.
Jolly good.
That's interesting to know. The two of you have got strange giggliness going on then.
Yes, I have a very bad habit of giggling. I do apologise.
Better, honestly, there are a lot worse bad habits than giggling, Debbie. I have several of them.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to, I don't smoke. I'm not allowed coffee anymore. I've got to retain
some. I was reading bodily bad habits, not actually smoking and stuff. You used to smoke, though. I've seen pictures of you smoking, Debbie.
Oh, yes. I found out Isla was in there.
Well, good for Isla for changing your ways. It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Kirby was going to interrupt then, which would have cost him points. Go on then, Kirby, I'll let you have that one.
What?
You sounded like you were going to... Oh, you said you won't, didn't you? You said you won't get this one.
I won't.
Yeah, so I thought you were interrupting, because that doesn't happen very often, does it?
I'm not interrupting.
I know, that's what I just said. It doesn't happen very often that you don't interrupt. Okay, the current scores are, before we add in the bets, in last place with minus 3 points, it's Kirby, and in joint lead with minus 2 points each, it's Mary and Debbie. There are no points in the bonus spot. Mary, who do you think is going to be winning?
Kirby.
Right, okay. Debbie, who do you think is going to be winning?
Kirby.
Yeah, good point. Kirby, who do you think is going to be winning?
Debbie.
That's a stupid choice. Right, Mary, who do you think is going to be in last place?
Me.
Right, I'll copy and paste that. Debbie, who do you think is going to be in last place?
Mary, sorry.
No, there's no Mary, sorry here. We've got Mary. I'll put that in there for you. Kirby, who do you think is going to be in last place?
Mary, not sorry.
Somebody's got to be there, you know.
So the first question with minus 2 points to start with is Mary's, and it's this. Which character utters the first words of Talons of Weng Chiang?
Oh, come on. Chang. Mr. Chang.
Nope. Debbie knows.
Jago.
Well done. Moves it to minus one. Right. Debbie.
Yes.
What is the name of the missing girl the cab driver was looking for?
I'm going to play my joker. It's Emma.
Well, I couldn't get that one. You got that one.
Where's my Emma?
Kirby.
Master.
What is Chang's first saying? What if it, no, these Chinese proverbs. What was his first saying?
I don't know.
Anybody? Oh, might as well just left it on there.
Oh, I know.
Oh, that was close.
It's something about, yeah, men who go too fast fall in bear trap.
I'm going to give you that one. Not word for word, but it's worth a point.
Because I remember saying it to Isla. What was it?
It was, man who goes too quickly may step in bear trap.
Okay. I just thought it was really funny because Isla runs a lot and it's like, yeah, don't, there's a saying.
Kirby. She... hang on. That was your question, wasn't it?
Wait, right. That was my question. Yeah,
so
yeah.
2 points in the bonus. Yeah. Shut up. Bonus point. Bonus spot. 2 points. Ready? Who did the doctor hope they would catch at the theatre?
I think I know.
Go on, Em.
I'm going to joker this. Little Titch.
Oh, yeah.
Is the correct answer.
Hmm.
Well done. So.
You know, Laurie Nix keeps going on about it.
She does, right. So the scores after the first round are in last place with minus 2 points, it's Mary. In second place with 1 point, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 4 points, it's Debbie. This is Mary's question.
Okay.
What is the name of the frightened Irishman?
I know.
Casey?
Ooh. Should have played your joker, Mary.
Joker, that one.
Mm.
Well, that was a guess. I'm not going to play my joker.
Debbie.
Yes.
How many Chinese thugs did the doctor fight with before he is rescued by Leela?
Four?
He's on fire this evening. Kirby.
Master.
What was the Chinese man being strangled with when the police arrived at the affray?
His own pigtail.
Kirby's on fire. No points in the bonus spot. Straight round to Mary. How long is it since the Doctor was last in China? And I don't mean, obviously, during the period of the Doctor. I mean, in its own timeline, in the script, in other words.
I know.
Right, this is Mary's question. How many years, Mary?
I guess I'll have to pass on that one.
Okay, apparently Kirby knows.
400 years.
That's the correct answer. Right, Debbie.
Yeah.
What colour was the suicide pill?
Oh, I know that.
Don't actually remember that.
No, well, you can pick a colour, surely.
Red.
Even her guesses are
lucky. Because I was wearing it, it's my favourite colour.
Kirby.
Master.
What killed the Chinaman in police custody? What killed the Chinaman in police custody?
Scorpion venom. Highly concentrated scorpion venom.
No,
that's
that'll
right.
Do. Scorpion venom will do. Right, there's 1 point in the bonus spot for this question. Where does the Doctor first meet Lightfoot? And you have to have the correct... That's not a simple answer. It's the actual address, essentially. So where does he first meet Lightfoot?
Who's this question for?
It's a bonus spot question.
Oh, was it the autopsy room?
Is it Four Manskill Gardens?
Nope, it was Limehouse Mortuary and Coroner's Court.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear, indeed. Right, the scores are at the moment. No points for Mary in the last place, 6 points for Kirby in second place, and 8 points for Debbie in the lead. Right, so Mary's question. Mary.
Yes.
Okay, right. What is the cliffhanger for episode one?
Oh, is that with the Doctor and Leela encounter that rat in the sewer?
Yay.
Times you should play your Joker on that one. There's a couple of times you could have played your Joker, right?
Yeah,
there.
You keep giving your Joker.
Debbie. But I'm guessing. I don't.
That's not a guess. It was...
How many times am I going to say that?
Guess, right.
A few more.
Debbie.
Yeah?
Never lost where I was. What colour tie does Leela wear? Before she changes her suit, obviously. Pardon?
Black.
Nope. Anybody?
Nope.
Anybody can just have a colour guess?
Nope.
Red.
That's a point for Kirby. It was indeed
was
red.
It?
Yes. Ooh. Kirby nearly ended up with 76 points then, which would have been terrible. Right. And there's 2 points in the bonus spot. And the bonus spot question is, how was Leela found in regards to the story the Doctor told Lightfoot?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, go on, Mary.
Savage found floating down the Amazon in a hat box.
Yeah. Again, should have played your Joker on that one.
Yeah, on a box.
Oh, you can play your Joker.
Yes.
Of course you can.
Okay.
Right. It's your question anyway now.
Okay.
I won't do a score update. Lightbox, where is it? Here we go, right then. So this is Mary's question, which is, what is Leela as sharp as, according to Lightfoot? What is Leela as sharp as, according to Lightfoot?
I know.
I don't know. Pass it on.
Kirby knows.
Sharp as a trout.
Yes.
Indeed. I didn't know they were sharp as a trout.
I didn't either. But
nor
that's
did
what
I,
he
but
says.
Apparently they are. Debbie.
Yeah.
What does the Doctor find on the floor on the way to the cellar with Jago? Strange noise.
I think I know.
Me.
Yeah, you, yes.
Was it a glove?
Well, it wasn't a glove. No, no. Kirby knows.
A handkerchief?
I guess you don't know, huh?
No. It's a money spider.
I thought it was a glove.
No, it says here, money spider.
Oh.
Yes. That was Debbie's question, wasn't it?
Oh, Kirby. Yeah, that giant fake spider.
Kirby.
For some reason, I've never noticed
that was from Planet of Spiders,
before.
That fake spider, Kirby.
Huh?
That was a prop from Planet of the Spiders, that fake spider.
Oh, really? So for some reason, I'd never really noticed it before this most recent watching.
Oh, dear. Right, Kirby, it's your question.
Master.
What does the Doctor call Jago sarcastically after he faints at the sight of an apparition?
I don't know.
Ooh.
I know.
You know, do you, Debbie?
Rock of Gibraltar.
He's the Quebec dancer. There 4 points.
Top lines in
there
this.
Are four
this
points.
This is the girl who doesn't take notes. Huh?
Yeah, 4 points in the bonus pot. And it's what tune does the Doctor whistle as he approached Lightfoot's house after Leela had thrown a knife into Mr. Sin's neck? What tune does he whistle? Won't get this one.
Oh.
Oh dear.
Isn't it the same tune from Bridge Over the River Kwai?
No
whistle
idea.
It.
I beg your pardon,
whistle
Debbie?
It.
No.
Whistle it.
No. If you knew it, you would know it. Too late. The answer was Colonel Bogey.
Yes. That is.
It may well be, but I wanted the title of the tune, not what film it was in. So there's still 4 points
in
the bonus
film.
Yes, it was. Mary.
Yes.
What is sleep for, according to the Doctor?
What is what for?
What is sleep for, according to the Doctor?
I know.
For the dead?
Well, unfortunately, Kirby knows.
Yeah, in case you didn't notice, Lillian said it earlier.
Just answer the blimmin' question.
Sleep is for tortoises.
Correct. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
Who did the Doctor share a salmon he caught once with?
Oh, I know.
Good. I would play my countdown theme for Debbie, but it's very quiet for some reason at the moment.
No, sorry.
Okay, right. Mary knows.
The Venerable Bede.
Did you play your Joker?
Well, on a one-point question, I don't think so. Not even I would do that unless it was
the
last
question.
She's
playing tactically here.
Yes, she is. Right, the current scores are in last place with 5 points, it's Mary. In joint first place with 9 points each, it's Debbie and Kirby. There are 6 points in the bonus pot.
The loser sure knows how to play tactically, doesn't she?
Yes.
All right, Debbie, your question.
I thought it was bonus pot.
How can it be? Oh, yeah, of course it is. Yeah. Yes, bonus pot. The six points in the bonus pot. Well done, Debbie, for keeping track. Right, so what animals are in Chang's dressing room?
Doves?
He's the click dancer.
Hey!
Yes, that changes the scores a little bit. 21. Yeah, good. So, yes, and I wasn't double points, was I? Oh, good Lord, I really miscalculated that one, did I? 15 points. Right, so, yes, so indeed I was added, put your score up a little bit. So, right, Mary.
Yes.
When Leela flees to the sewers, how many bangs on the gong does Weng Chiang do?
Oh, my gosh. Two?
Anybody?
Three? That's just a guess.
Debbie.
Yes.
What is Chang a master of? Oh. Hang on, volume went down. Say that again.
No.
Oh, I thought you said something and then wasn't it?
I
went
no, because I couldn't remember.
Okay, so anybody for what is Chang a master of? We've gone very quiet. Another point in the bonus pot. The answer is... What she knows. The answer is magic and mesmerism. I think it was on his poster. Kirby.
Master.
What comment by Chang did Jago think droll?
Mr. Sin is indisposed. I thought that was great.
So, there's 3 points in the bonus pot. for this question. The time cabinet was a gift to Lightfoot's mother from whom? Could say you won't get this one, so I will. Too late. The answer was Su Chi, or Chung Chi. Sorry, not Su Chi, Chung Chi. Okay, that's what it said in the script. And there's still 3 points in the bonus pot. And we move around to Mary again, who still hasn't played a joker. How did Lightfoot describe Leela's appearance in her new dress? That's for Mary, by the way.
I don't remember.
Anybody?
I don't remember.
No, that's not what you say. Mary gave that answer. The answer was quite delightful. So I'll give you that one. Debbie.
Yes.
What was the name of the artist singing Daisy Daisy? You won't get this one. Come very quiet again.
I'm thinking.
Oh, okay.
I know it's on a sign, but I don't remember what it said.
No, I don't remember. I remember it, but I don't remember.
Okay.
No.
Anybody else? Okay. Then these are good questions. Then the answer was Lottie Randall. Kirby.
Master.
What card did Chang aim to shoot with the magic bullet?
I'm probably going to get this wrong, and maybe it's the Ace of Spades.
Anybody?
Ace of Diamonds.
Okay. I knew it was an ace.
Yeah, clearly. Bonus pot. 8 points in the bonus pot. So Mary gets this one, and with a joker, this could be quite interesting.
Ooh.
What did the doctor call Mr. Sin?
I'll give it a shot.
Go on, Em.
The Peking Homunculus.
Did you play your joker then, Mary?
I'm playing my joker.
I thought you might be. Yep, that's changed the scores a bit. Right, so yes, that was indeed what she said. So the current scores in last place were 12 points, it's Kirby. In second place was 16 points, it's Debbie. And in the lead with 21 points, it's Mary. Mary's question. Right, then, Mary.
Good Mary.
What was that a stupid question? I've written it down wrong. What did Mr. Sin like? Hang on, I'll read that one because I can't understand it. Shut up. I'm going to put war in there because I can't read it because it says wars in there. Right.
Because I know.
What wars did Mr. Sin's like almost cause, Mary? So what war? It was war.
Yeah,
what
only, war? Yeah, oh. Just the one. Yeah. World War VI.
Ooh.
Yeah, sorry about that taking so long to ask such a simple question. Debbie.
Yeah, we got there in the end.
Yeah, we did. Debbie, who does Wang Chiang order to take the sting of the scorpion pill by way of punishment for failing him?
Oh, my God.
Too long. Beg your pardon?
Lee?
No, I'm going to give you that one. Here's the correct answer. Right. And Kirby.
Master.
What energy does Wang Chiang not understand?
Sigma energy.
No points in the bonus spot. Current scores in last place are 14 points, Kirby, in second place with 18 points, Debbie, and then the lead to 23 points, Mary. Mary's question. Yes. Where does Chang say the Wang Chiang will kill that Wang Chiang will kill again? Where does Chang say that Wang Chiang will kill again?
Oh, I don't know.
I know.
Well, I'll tell you that Kirby apparently knows.
At the House of the Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
Where do Chang's ancestors walk to greet him from?
Palace of Jade.
Ooh, that was a quiet ding, but it has to be because my family are asleep. Kirby.
Master.
What does Jago say when they are caught by Weng Chiang's henchmen? It's a really good line. I should have used it with my quote, actually.
What?
Whose question is that? I lost it. Was you, Kirby, wasn't it?
What, it's my question. What did you just say?
I said it's a. I should have used it as my quote. I said it's a really
okay,
good.
I don't know.
Okay, then we'll do. Does anybody know?
Is it something about his danders up being a tiger? I'm a tiger with my danders up.
Eventually you get there, don't we? Yes, that's the correct answer.
Right. I love that expression, dander.
Yes. 2 points in the bonus pot. And it's this question, I can find where I was. Oh, yeah, all right. What does Leela say when the doctor says, do you know what that it is, when he finds the key to the time cabinet in the bag? What does Leela say when the doctor says, do you know what that is, when he finds the key to the time cabinet in the bag?
Oh, I know.
Go on, then.
You asked me so that you can tell me.
Oh, that was my quote.
Yeah. So the scores are: in last place with 17 points, Kirby; in second place with 21 points, Debbie; in the lead with 23 points, it's Mary. Next question goes to Mary. Mm-hmm. Not many questions left now, you'd be surprised to hear. What of Lightfoot's weapons does Leela try out before she moves Weng Chiang's mask? So there's two weapons she tries out before.
She does the cricket bat, and then she does the golf club.
Correct. Oh, 25. Yeah, sorry, I made a mistake there. I typed in the wrong amount. That's a great answer. Right then, Debbie.
Yes.
What has Weng Chiang never appreciated?
I don't know.
Okay, anybody?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, then the answer is frivolity. I'll do with that. I forgot to press there. That's what we wanted. Right, Kirby.
Master.
Oh, was that Debbie's question last? Sorry.
Yes, it was.
Right, Kirby.
Master.
What soup does the doctor say he will have when he suggests to Weng Chiang that his sanctum is where all the cooking is done?
Oh, that's an easy one. It's bird's nest soup.
Correct. 2 points in the bonus pot. What are Weng Chiang's pseudonyms? There's three of them.
Oh, I know one.
Go on, Em.
The Butcher of Brisbane.
That's a good start. Any more?
Minister of Justice.
Any more?
Agnes Greel.
So you got a point each for that one.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Even though there was only 2 points in the bonus pot, I was very generous. I gave you a point each. Yes.
Magnus Greel is his name. Weng Chiang is his pseudonym.
Shut up.
It's kind of backwards.
Shut up. Right then. Mary's question. Oh, do we do the scores? No. Mary's question is, how many deaths can be laid at Weng Chiang's door?
Don't know.
Right, anybody? Go on in, Kirby.
100,000.
Clicked. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
What does the doctor call matches for the benefit of Lightfoot?
God. I don't know.
Right, Kirby knows apparently.
Yes, I absolutely do know because I noticed it when they were saying it. Lucifer's.
Oh.
Okay, Kirby. Where is Weng Chiang's food supply halfway to during the final battle?
I don't know.
Anybody?
Yeah, don't know.
Okay, we play this, and the answer is Blackheath. Right, there's 4 points in the bonus spot, and the scores are: joint second place with 22 points each, it's Debbie and Kirby. In the lead with 26 points, it's Mary. 4 points, as I say, in the bonus pot for this question. What did the Doctor treat everyone to at the end of the story?
Muffins.
There, we got that one.
Wait, but you said we're supposed to say that we know, not yell out the answer.
Didn't do either. You're annoyed
yes,
by that, Mary.
Right.
I didn't even hear what she said. All I know is there's noise.
She
there.
Said muffins.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. A different question.
Yeah, you picked on Andy because he was doing the same thing.
Oh, okay, then I'll do a different question. Right, we're back to where we were then. Still 4 points in the bonus pot for this question. What was the last line of the story uttered by Jago? Gone very quiet again. They're all answering the previous question, now they're all gone very quiet.
Yeah.
Nobody knows?
No.
That's a shame.
No.
That was the last question of the quiz. So that the bonus just evaporates into nothingness. So I can't be bothered to get a question out of the Trivial Pursuit bin. So the final scores are in joint last place of 22 points each, Debbie and Kirby. And the lead with 26 points, it's Mary. Right.
Yay!
Yeah, but I'm not going to win because right. I love our guesses, yeah.
So, Mary predicted Kirby to win, therefore gets nothing for that, and predicted Mary to the bottom, gets nothing for that. Debbie predicted Kirby to win and gets nothing for that, and Mary to the bottom gets nothing.
The score will be the same.
And Debbie predicted, shut up, Kirby to win, and got and Mary to the bottom. So the final scores this week are in last place, jointly last place, and the second place, no doubt, with 22 points each, is Debbie and Kirby. But the winner this week with 26 points, it's Mary.
I guess a sufficient number of years have passed that I finally get to win.
You've won a few times in the last year. And stick that in your database, Kirby, and twiddle your pipe with it or whatever you want to do.
I am already. How did you know that I'm already updating things?
Well, you say it every time we do a show. I was going to say every week, but that doesn't happen, does it? Every time we do a show, so yes. Right then, so I've through
so,
one.
So is this episode 380?
No, 382.
382.
I did say that at the beginning of the show, actually. So, point deducted for Kirby for not listening.
Okay. I see. Wait,
doesn't change the scores much. Right.
Wait, what was... I've got numbering wrong somewhere.
Clearly, right then. Now, yeah, so we have... Lillian Robin says, oh, Debbie and I... Oh, I've done that one. And then she says... Oh, yeah, Laurie Nix. So, are we all giving this one two nipples up? Please do, Laurie. I do love a nipple. And then she says, this Kirby's on fire. Not quite. Little scorpion picture from Laurie.
I didn't win.
No. Laurie Nicks, Venerable Bead. And then Go Mary Go. I think you have some fans out there, Mary.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's provided anything else on the thing.
Well, then she says, we survived Talons with only a very slight case of the Oopazootics.
Yes. I don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Right, Doctor Who News. I don't think the actual the page goes back in the amount of weeks we've had to wait since we last recorded the show. However, in that time, I have acquired... and you have to watch the Facebook feed to see this. Ooh, this rather wonderful figurine, shall we say, of the 13th Doctor.
Yes, you put that on the page, didn't
you? It's very nice, apart from the people who do design the figurine missed the fact that the trim that they've put on the Doctor's coat is in fact the Doctor's braces. They've not looked at the pictures properly. The Doctor's bases are sort of like a rainbow, almost so it's like a gay pride logo, but they've actually just attached it to the side of the coat. So a bit of a cock up there for the people trying to do the detail. On the other hand, it does look very much like Jodie Whittaker. But yes, that's a nice little addition to my collection of figurines. Obviously, it's a big figure, so I'll just have to keep it on the box until they bring on the mantelpiece, until they bring out the 5-inch figures. Hopefully they do one day. Right then, Doctor Who News. There's Doctor Who Magazine 528, which is out. You can buy it at whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Actually, we've done that. Forget that one. I've already done that one, but you can buy it there. Because we're in July. We last recorded at the beginning of August. Can you believe that? Seen such a long time ago. New Fourth Doctor Audio Adventures. Big Finish have confirmed that the Fourth Doctor, as played by Tom Baker, will be continuing his audio adventures until at least 2021. He's quite an old chap, to, considering he's still going to be with us in 2021. Yes, it's very optimistic, but I'm glad they're thinking that way. Two new audio series featuring the enigmatic fine travelling Bohemian have been confirmed out for release in 2020 and 2021, with the Fourth Doctor being joined by some old friends. In Series 9 of the Fourth Doctor Adventures, Tom Baker's Doctor is reunited with Time Lady Romana Dravatnalunda. I nearly said that wrong. Romana Dravatnalunda. They've written it down confusingly. Number 2, played by Lala Ward, which is interesting considering he used to be married to her. Matthew Waters plays Atric. And who else have we got here? John Leeson reprises his role of K-9. A lovely picture of the group of them there. Obviously, this must be set after Full Circle. These stories are set at the beginning of Tom Baker's last television series as the Doctor in Series 18. In between the stories State of Decay and Warrior's Gate, Trapped in East Space, a pocket universe next to our own end space, the Doctor acquires a new companion, Adric, a 15-year-old mathematical genius, who begins to travel with the Doctor and Romana. Now, I seem to remember at the time that each story led one into the next, so how they managed to fit this in, I don't know, but there you go. I'm quite pleased they did. BBC court case update. The BBC is continuing its attempt to get the US courts to force computer firms to release details identifying the individual who leaked a short section for the upcoming series of Doctor Who, which I quite enjoyed, and it wasn't too revealing in regards to spoilers. And of course, there's fans of the Lethbridge Stewart stories. There's some more stuff coming out about him. And Big Finish celebrated 20 years of audio adventures quite recently. That was posted on the 13th of August. We love Big Finish, even though I never really get time to listen to any of it. Janet Hargreaves has passed away at the age of 81. And she appeared in 3 episodes of the 1988 Doctor Who Stories, The Greatest Show in the Galaxy, playing Mum. Very, very sinister. Mum did a good job as well. And Dwas fundraising update. The Doctor Who Appreciation Society, Dwas, has announced the first in a series of fundraising events, raising money to pay for a blue plaque to honour first Doctor William Hartnell. What a good idea that is. A set of 8 colour postcards have been released, selling for £5.99 at the Society's eBay store, along with some recently released A2 posters. Cool. Now, that's really not a lot of news. We still haven't had a date yet as to when the series is starting. That would be a nice thing to have, wouldn't it, everybody?
Should be soonish.
Must be. They keep on doing teaser trailers, so it must be coming up soon.
Yeah, all we say is autumn.
Yeah. Also, I did hear a rumour that it's switching to midweek, which is a bit of a shame. Means it's the end, apparently. 3 more years, and that'd be the end of Doctor Who, because that's what happened last time.
That's what I think.
Well, it'd be the end of Doctor Who until they realised they shouldn't have got rid of it, because it's a bit of a good export and stuff. But, yeah, that'd be a shame, wouldn't it? And poor old Jodie Whittaker will get the blame for it, of course. Or maybe Chris Chibnall will get the blame for it for casting her. Or several other reasons that could be the reason. It'd be quite ironic in some ways if after 3 years, or hopefully that, hopefully not one, that they do shelve the series, because I seem to remember when the series originally got shelved, Chris Chibnall was one of the ones who was complaining about the poor quality of scripts that were actually being put into the series at the time, mainly by Pip and Jane Baker. But there you go. Right. We have some sponsors to talk about.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
No, it's Lavazzi. Huh? I got you there, didn't I? Yeah. No, it is whowon.co.uk. Doctor Who magazine special 50 World of Doctor Who is out, with a picture of David Tennant on the cover. The 13th Doctor figure, like the one I've just showed you, if you've been watching on the Facebook feed, is available for £19.99. It's a 10-inch adventure doll with real fabric clothes, quite inaccurately rendered, and a sonic screwdriver accessory. And like I said, Doctor Who magazine 528 is out, and the Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver, the 13th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver, which looks a bit that has been, yeah, rude. That's a correct word I was thinking of. Rude.
I think the attempt was organic, but
the attempt was to be a bit silly. Really, there's some lovely pin badges come out. There's a Dalek pin badge. These are £2.99. The TARDIS pin badge. Now, these are affordable, listeners. You can get these through whoone.co.uk, sent out to the US or wherever you are in the world.
So it probably costs more to ship it to us than the item itself.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
But it's still affordable, Mary. It's affordable. And it keeps our sponsors in business, so it's got to be worth doing, isn't it? Also coming soon, we've got loads of dramas on audio via CD in this particular instance. Churchill Years 2, Dominators, Goodbye Piccadilly, Out of the Cybermen, Instant Karma, Invisible Enemy, Jenny the Doctor's Daughter, Red Planets. All those are audio adventures available, probably to download from Big Finish, but here you can buy the actual hard copies from whoone.co.uk. Lavazzi, now you might be surprised to hear this if you're a regular listener to the show, they provide Doctor Who fans with the iconic Fourth Doctor scarf. Now I think that's their claim to fame, and they'd be stupid to stop doing them, to be fair, because no Doctor Who fan is a Doctor Who fan if they don't have one of these, are they, Debbie?
No, exactly.
But yes, they are fab, and they're not unaffordable. Well, you could buy an unaffordable one if you so wished. You can get one for £69.99, which is the Fourth Doctor scarf, 18-foot long, series 16-17. But there are slightly cheaper ones. You get the short version for £24.99 and the standard one for £49.99. But you can also get things like the Seventh Doctor's ? Jumper, which I love. I've got upstairs. I don't wear it because every time I wear it snags on something. It's too precious to me. And of course you can get ties, other scarves, Paisley scarves. It's just lovely stuff. You can also get Star Trek memorabilia and Sherlock stuff. Now the Sherlock stuff is just lovely. We're coming up to winter soon, hopefully in November, and we've got a bobblehead that says I am Sherlock, and some cool scarves. There's a limited edition Sherlock wool scarf with yellow graffiti smiley on it.
Hey, wait a second. Have you even seen Sherlock yet?
No, but I know a lot of people do like it, so I'm just trying to say this is what you can get at Lavazzi. Thank you very much, Kirby. Right. Now, I'm just going to look in my diary. Now, have I missed anything? Has anybody posted anything? Let's have a look on the Facebook feed. Mary Britt Slang said, thanks, Laurie. And then Laurie Nick said, we survived Talons with only a very slight case of oopizootics. Right, anyway, what was I talking about? I was on the Vase. Next week. Well, yeah, it's a Horror Fang Rock is the next story. Now, very unusually, I have a complete blank on the 26th of August, so I plan to record on the 26th of August. So what do you reckon of that, then?
Well, I won't be there. I'll be out of town.
What have you got to say for yourself?
He's out of town.
Okay, fair enough.
I won't be there.
So, a week from today...
Yeah, that is the 26th of August, Kirby.
Okay, easy.
Besides,
we've done this one before 4 years ago.
4 years ago. What's the story called? Horror Fang Rock. I'll see if I've got any questions on it, and then that saves me a horror. Oh, dear. Oh, I can't spell horror.
Yeah, we only had three of us were on. It was just you, me, and Mary.
But Mary's not on it this time. I'll have to see if I can find the recording and play Mary's view of it that time, won't we?
So I don't know if you would have had a quiz with just the two of us.
What, just me and you? Hold on, I can't do that.
No, I mean, with, no.
What, you and Debbie?
Mary and me.
I can't remember. Anyway, right, on the feed, Laurie Nick said, Jag said that, and then she says Jago. I think he's talking about the case of the oopizootics. Sorry, Larry, I was just trying to be facetious. I'm never facetious on this show, probably because I can't say it.
So,
after all this time, and finally get... Well, what time is it now? It's about 2 hours. I can finally say to our viewer, I'm sorry that Tim Drury couldn't hang around. For those that did, thank you. And if everything goes to plan, we'll be back next week. Yes, a weekly podcast.
Yay.
We'll be back within a week. This is ridiculous. This isn't unheard of. But until then, thank you for listening to the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.